Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 53 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Meet Derek Sanderson, Policy Wonk. Sanderson, who was appointed director of the Washington State Department of Agriculture in 2015, was part of a panel during the 2017 Tri-State Grain Growers Convention. Also speaking were Oregon Agriculture Director Alexis Taylor and Idaho's Deputy Agriculture Director Brian Oakey. Given the length of the discussion and the fact that I work for the Washington Grain Commission and Sanderson leads the Washington State Department of Agriculture, I made the decision to focus on his remarks alone. This is not to say that Taylor and Oakey's comments weren't equally worth including. I just didn't have the time. I have interacted with a lot of WSDA directors over the years. Some have impressed me, others have not. Sanderson impresses me. You can tell from the way he talks that he's not just reading words written on a page by an aide. He understands what he's talking about. Unlike other agricultural directors I've listened to at luncheons over the years, Sanderson doesn't waste any time speaking in platitudes about how great agriculture in the state is. Asked by panel moderator, National Association of Wheat Growers CEO Chandler Gould, for opening remarks about the state's agriculture, Sanderson launched into a 5-minute recitation of the challenges and opportunities facing Washington wheat farmers now and into the future.
This is and has been recently a very challenging time for the wheat industry. There are also some opportunities out there for a better tomorrow. And I think, you know, starting just talking challenges, starting with 2016, that was certainly a challenging year for wheat growers in the Pacific Northwest. The falling numbers situation that quickly emerged was a shock to the system. I think coupled with already low wheat prices, the discounting that occurred associated with the low falling numbers was financially devastating to many farmers. And but on the bright side, I was very pleased with the reaction of the Washington Grain Commission, the Oregon Wheat Commission, the Idaho Wheat Commission in terms of coming to grips with this problem, and certainly for looking forward to better handling situations like this in the future, including an active effort to breed out susceptibility to low falling numbers in our wheat varieties. So I think, you know, we've received a lot of support from our congressional delegations in all three states, but I would want to single out Senator Murray, who's very helpful in securing or helping to we haven't quite secured them yet, but secure some additional resources for dealing with falling numbers. I also should thank USDA was also very helpful in that regard. In 16, there was also an event that happened. It was the U.S. District Court of Oregon and their action to invalidate the FCRPS biop for the Columbia River system. They also declared that CORE and Reclamation had violated NEPA by adopting the 2014 supplemental biop. This is, you know, pretty significant ruling. Among the requirements in that ruling was that BPA, CORE, and Reclamation prepare an environmental impact statement, a NEPA environmental impact statement, and that environmental impact statement must include the removal of at least one of the dams on the in the system. And that EIS is proceeding. The Washington State Department of Agriculture is a cooperating agency with the federal agencies on this, so we're in the conversation continuously because this is so important to us, and the ability for particularly in regard to the dams, so our ability to move product down the Columbia River to the ports in Vancouver and Portland. The ruling also included a requirement that in 2018 that the spill at Columbia River dams and Snake River dams increase, and that's under study right now in terms of what that will look like. But, again, depending on the nature of the water year, that increased spill can have an effect on overall water supply availability. So as we move towards 18, We're dealing with another set of challenges. Certainly, we're looking for movement on the Canadian Columbia River Treaty that we have not seen yet. The clock continues to tick towards the 2024 implementation of the called upon and effective use requirements, which will affect will significantly affect operation of dams on the U.S. side of the border. We're also all following NAFTA, and NAFTA recently is becoming more of a crisis than a challenge in terms of the threats to terminate NAFTA that are coming from the current administration. And just to put this in perspective, in 2016, Washington State exported about $1.7 billion of agricultural products to Mexico and Canada. So, and in fact, Canada is the leading buyer of Washington agricultural products. So this is the stakes are huge for Washington agriculture, but it's true of all other states in the United States as well, and for that matter, the provinces and states of Canada and Mexico. All three nations have benefited greatly on the agricultural side from NAFTA. So again, this is something that we've got to be very engaged in terms of making sure that the message gets across that what the tremendous downside would be to the agricultural economy of our country if NAFTA is terminated. And finally, I do want to mention the Farm Bill because maybe that's where we could talk about opportunities. Certainly, we're looking for improvements in crop insurance. We think there's a good chance that the trade promotion provisions of the Farm Bill might actually get plussed up in terms of the amount of money that's devoted to that. And it's estimated, I believe, for the trade promotion programs about $26 in trade comes in for every dollar we spend on trade promotion. So it's a great win-win situation for the United States and the agricultural economy. And also we're looking for, we'll be more in a position on the conservation side of defending existing conservation programs. I don't think they'll be plussed up, but I think if Farm Bill is being viewed as sort of a zero-sum proposition, if something gets plussed up, something else gets hurt. And so we have to be very careful that we don't lose our important conservation programs.
Sandison's grasp of the issues can leave others in the dust. The alphabet soup he whizzed through earlier, FCRPS BIOP, is short for the Federal Columbia River Power System's biological opinion affecting 13 species of Columbia River salmon and steelhead and setting forth the needs for their survival. Everybody thought the issue was solved, but as you heard, an Oregon district judge thought otherwise. NEPA, meanwhile, stands for National Environmental Policy Act, which requires federal agencies to assess the environmental effects of their proposed actions prior to making decisions. There's more inside baseball coming up as Sandison talks about the renegotiation of the Columbia River Treaty, but no acronyms that need explaining. Gould asked the next four questions, followed by two from members of the audience who identify themselves.
From each of your perspectives, what is the biggest issues that should be addressed through the negotiation of the Columbia River Treaty?
I'll take it because I've had the advantage of being involved in the discussion since 2010. So, there are a number of big issues. If you look at the regional recommendations, probably first and foremost, two things. One is the Canadian entitlement, the way in which power benefits are calculated, is way out of whack and needs to be realigned. I think the second thing is we need to get assured storage. What we're losing in 2024 is the 8.95 million acre feet of assured storage in Canadian reservoirs that's available to handle runoff. So in a high runoff year, in order to prevent flooding in the U.S., Canada, BC Hydro has that or will make that capacity available to hold back runoff waters. So again, we can minimize flooding in the U.S. And it's done in a cooperative way because we're also using our reservoirs in that management system. And that's been, for 60 years, well, up to 2024, for 60 years we've had the benefit of that. In 2024, that goes away. And the only way we can get storage space in Canadian reservoirs is we have to call for it, and we have to pay for it. But before we can pick up the phone, we've got to make what's called effective use of all U.S. reservoirs. Which, but anyway, and our interpretation of that is U.S. reservoirs with a flood control purpose established by Congress. Their interpretation is no, it's any reservoir. So what that means is that we have to do everything we can to create storage, flood storage, on the U.S. side of the border before we can pick up the phone and ask for help. That means based on the March forecast, the one forecast that occurs in March, you're deciding how much water to push out of a system, and you're dropping your reservoir levels and using them, hitting them much harder than we have in the past. If that March forecast is wrong, it could have devastating effects by the end of the, towards the end of the growing season. If the refill's not occurring, if you're not getting the water from the upper system available in the lower system, so it doesn't have to be the 8.95 million acre feet, but some level of assured storage in Canada and taking pressure off our reservoirs is very important. Also we're looking long term at, is there a way that flows or water available in the U.S., and this is something we worked together with the state of Oregon on, was is there a way to use both the treaty and non-treaty storage to have a shapeable block of water that's available for out-of-stream use and in-stream use to support the needs on the Columbia main stem for Oregon and Washington. So a lot, a lot of potential there for improved operation and modernization, and we're looking forward to seeing that the negotiations commence. The U.S. State Department just appointed their negotiator, Jill Smale, and there's been recent developments in British Columbia with the new government being formed in Victoria, that some signs that they're getting closer to movement. So we're very optimistic that things will move forward quickly.
Could each of you talk to us about the outlook for the ag economy over the next coming years for your states?
For Washington, it's our industry is very diverse. We produce over 300 crops and commodities, so at any given time we're doing well in some sectors and doing poorly in others. I think wheat has had several years of struggle. Our dairy industry is struggling, but overall our total, if you add up all our total farm value, farm gate value, it's relatively stable, and so is our export values. I think the big question is, where do we go from here in terms of growing markets internationally? And I think Brian alluded to his earlier comments to the level of uncertainty that we're facing right now in our foreign markets. And a couple of things at play. One is the TPP rejection has caused a lot of problems with Pacific Rim nations that have been trading partners with us. We created a vacuum, in a sense, by rejection of TPP, and others are looking to fill that vacuum at our expense, and I think that's something we're very concerned about. I think the notion that we're going to replace TPP with a series of bilaterals does not seem to be panning out. I would say that Washington agriculture was very supportive of TPP and very supportive of multilateral agreements rather than bilateral. So very concerned about the stability of markets overseas. The other thing we're concerned about is, and particularly in the case of NAFTA, is the potential that we're alienating our consumers, the average consumer in Canada and in Mexico, and what long-term effect that's going to have in terms of their willingness to select or prefer U.S. products and Washington products. There's a lot of competition out there. There's other suppliers of agricultural products who are more than willing to step in and provide products to those countries. And so we've got to get stability, bring back stability into our foreign trade.
Could you address to us why does the Farm Bill matter to your state in good years, but also in the bad years?
I would say that Farm Bill does provide a framework for a support framework for U.S. agriculture, but it also, more importantly, I think, provides a framework for support of healthy rural communities, and rural communities are the backbone of the ag world. many of the programs that are in the Farm Bill are, in fact, extremely important to those rural communities. And we're Washington's approach in terms of identifying priorities. I mean, rural broadband and issues like that are going to be very well featured in our priorities that we provide to Congress and our delegation. Obviously, crop insurance, extremely important in terms of we went through a bad experience with that in 2016 related to the falling numbers. But, you know, bad years, yeah, it's a very important tool. But, again, I think we're not going to be a broken record on trade promotion, but that's something that's extraordinarily important in good and bad years. So thank you.
What is your state doing to fill the void? Some of you have alluded to this already. After we left TPP and with the uncertainty around NAFTA and the lack of a clear agenda, trade agenda from this administration, so what are each of your states doing to deal with that?
Well, we've taken the approach that, and I think Alexis alluded to this, but you know, we think it's very important that we play a role in helping to send the signal to our trade partners, our foreign trade partners, that we're friends, that we want to continue doing business with you, that we appreciate their loyalty to U.S. products, but certainly Washington State products, and just to give that kind of reassurance. We did a trade mission to governor's trade mission to Mexico in May, and that was the primary purpose. We weren't really pushing any specific trade issue, but simply trying to relay the message that we're there to continue working with them. We've had similar discussions with the Canadian Consul General and Japanese Consul General in terms of, again, making sure they understand that we're supportive. We want to continue doing business, and I think that's something we as a state, and I believe, I know Oregon at least, I don't know about Idaho, but as a state, we will continue to kind of aggressively pursue. So,
Randy Cease from Washington State, and it's to the whole panel. I appreciate the fact that you all understand the importance of agriculture to your state's economy, but I also know there's a lot of people in Western Washington and Western Oregon, Southern Idaho, that know nothing about agriculture. What are you doing in your state to help educate those people because they're the voters?
Well, that's obviously a significant problem. And I think there's another facet to that, and that is that there is a tremendous, because of social media and the internet, there's a tremendous amount of misinformation, some of it deliberate, that's out and available, and people are looking at that. And so it's something that, you know, it's a constant challenge for us to get the right information out, the correct information, to be able to point people to sources of information that are reliable, university research, that sort of thing, to offset some of deliberately misleading information that's floating around. I think as our urban areas continue to grow, that disconnect between the farm and the consumer continues to grow. What we're doing, we've been one of the participants in the television program Washington Grown. We're financially participating in that with the Potato Commission, kind of took the lead on getting that off the ground. We've also been in association with the production company, have been working on a social media campaign that is, again, trying to get the true story of Washington agriculture out to the consumer. So we're targeting social media, we're targeting schools, making sure that, again, we've got our people that, giving the correct picture of our agricultural industry. In spite of that, it's still a significant, challenge. We may be making a dent, but there's a long way to go before we get to a point where we feel comfortable that the people that are consuming food can connect with where it comes from. And that's just that, again, that's a tremendous disconnect right now and will take a lot of work. I mean, we can do what we can at our state or Idaho or Oregon. It's also going to take the industry. It's going to take help at the national level in terms of making sure we're all singing from the same sheet of music and getting the right information out.
This is Mike Miller with Washington State. Have you noticed any effect or inability? Trade is balanced. It also means that we import. Have you noticed anything with the buzz of NAFTA and CORUS and all of those trade agreements, have you heard anything that could affect our ability to import boats like the float full both ways?
It's an interesting question, because we've been so focused on the export, we haven't really thought that much, about the import side of it. But certainly, I think what I kind of alluded to earlier about the attitudes of the public in our countries that we do trade with, if that shifts to it in a negative way, I think it could have an effect on what's coming our way as well. Because they're going to have choices. Of course, we're in a position of, from a price standpoint, although the dollar's been strong and that's been kind of dampened this effect, but from a price standpoint, we're in many cases able to pay the freight, and so we've been a good importer. But again, I think as attitudes change, we may see effects in that regard.
As I indicated in the opening, I'm impressed by Sandison's detailed grasp of policy issues and their repercussions, which is pretty much the definition of wonk and goes to the title of my episode. Of course, wonk alone is not enough if you can't get things done. But in my observations of Sandison's interaction with the wheat industry, it appears he knows how to do that too. Until next time, I'm Scott Yates, hoping you'll join me again for another episode of Wheat All About It!
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.